Welcome to the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. I'm Brady, and I'm sharing my journey learning Bitcoin, hoping it makes yours a bit easier. How's it going out there, Bitcoiners? Thanks for joining me again today here at the dawn of the Bitcoin Renaissance. This week, we're sitting down with John Vallis. John's the host and creator of Bitcoin Rapid Fire, one of my very favorite podcasts. I don't miss an episode. Really excited to talk to John. I had a great time on his show sometime last year, and it was time just to get together and chat again. So first, an update from Swan. We're just a couple weeks away from launch. We'll do a closed beta first, then we'll roll it out over the following weeks. You can sign up for that closed beta at early access at swanbitcoin.com. We're running a new referral program there. You can get $5 of Bitcoin in your account when you're referred to friends. Also start stacking with Swan. We'll drop $5 into your friend's account too. Thanks as always to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network for including the pod in their feed. Give them a follow at LTB Network on Bitcoin Twitter and check out the LTBN feed in your podcast app for the other great Bitcoin podcasts included there. The Bitcoin 2020 conference is coming up quick. I hear rumors that it may be postponed or something. I hope not. I'm really hyped for it. Anyway, it is going to be epic if we end up having it there, March 27th, 28th. We'll see what happens. And remember to check out bitcoiners.best. You can submit and vote up the best Bitcoin content, raise money for critical open source projects while crowd curating our best Bitcoin content. All right, let's dive in with John. John Vallis is one of my very favorite Bitcoiners. I just love his style. I love his broad knowledge base. I had a great time chatting with John on his podcast last year, and I knew this was going to be a fun one, and it did not disappoint. We'll talk about John's background. We get into his rabbit hole story, and we dive down the psychedelics rabbit hole, LSD, mushrooms, and DMT, and then we bring it back to Bitcoin for a hyper-cosmic conclusion to the episode. It was so much fun. You guys are going to love it. Here we go. Nice. So what do you got there? What are you drinking?
Well, the reason why I have this one in particular is because right now my sister and I are staying at a friend's house and we're here for a couple months, and I was in a jam last night. Actually, I was on with Andy Edstrom, right? We were doing our podcast.
Nice. And, love Andy.
Yeah, he's great. And before the show, I didn't have time to go out and get some beer, but I noticed in the wine fridge of the place we're staying, there was a couple of single beers, and so I dipped into their stash, and I've never drank it before. It's called Creemore. It's a premium lager, it says. But I had a couple on with Andy, and I bought these tonight so I could replenish the fridge and have a couple myself. So no particular preference for this beer, but it's all pretty good.
It turned into the Brady John podcast beer. I've got this. This cocktail that my mixologist wife concocted for me.
What'd you say it was? Pineapple and whiskey? It's like rum?
It's rum. And then it's got like, she makes these things called shrubs, which is, I'd never heard of before. All right. So it's pineapple and basil. And then what makes it a shrub is that it's like you put a little vinegar in it. And it's not a lot, but it preserves it. And this is like the way that mixers were made, you know, 100, 150 years ago, before, you know, refrigeration was common. You'd have your like liquor, and you wanted to mix it with a little something. You'd take some herbs and some fruit, which are pretty rare, and you'd like put them together, preserve with a little vinegar, and boom, you can mix it with your moonshine.
So do you have like a big pot of that hanging out on your counter at home or something?
Oh man, she's got so many bottles of like random potions going
really
all over the place. Yeah, it's amazing.
Like what kind of stuff? Like kombucha and stuff, or?
She was into kombucha for a while, but now it's all cocktails. So she makes her own mixers and bitters and infuses all kinds of vodka infusions. All kinds of stuff.
We got to get locked in your house some night on a snowstorm or kind of storm.
Coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus.
We're all stocked up on, we got a bunch of meat and cocktails. So I think we'll be all right.
Did you prep? Were you one of the people at Costco?
No. I haven't been there. To me, it just seems pretty clearly a bunch of overhyped panic manufacturing going on.
Yeah, I mean, me too. But with these things, you know, Twitter is just a dumpster fire of everything, right? Like one person thinks it's the end of the world. The other person thinks it's absolutely nothing, you know, and with these things, I guess they can get out of control and they can turn into something that you didn't expect. But I tend to agree with you. I'm not canceling any plans or anything like that at this point.
Yeah, me neither. I'm going to sit back and see, but as far as I can tell, it's like a, you know, just kind of a nasty flu that it's, we don't have a vaccine for yet. And we'll probably get one, it sounds like, at some point, maybe a year or whatever, but it, you know, it's targeting mostly elderly men, who already have respiratory issues and doesn't really seem to affect kids, and everybody kind of in between gets a, you know, kind of a nasty cough for a little while and then it's all right. So I don't know. I'm going out to San Francisco for the Bitcoin 2020 conference.
When is that? It's in March?
Yeah, it's coming up. It's like 3 weeks. Right. I think it's the 27th, 28th is the conference. I'm going to go out a couple of days ahead to do some other things, some other parties and gatherings. But yeah, so people have been, you know, wondering, like calling me. I got a couple calls from the parents like, oh man, are you still traveling out to San Francisco? Like, you know, there's just so many people coming in through there from Asia. And, you know, are you sure you want to do this? And what if you get exposed and bring it back and all this stuff, you know? I was like, well,
you mean parents are like around in your neighborhood?
My parents.
Oh, yeah. Your parents.
My parents. My wife is cool. My wife's cool about it. She's like, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. My mom would do the same thing, man. She, anywhere I've ever went, I've gotten like newspaper clippings of the very worst things that have ever happened in those places, you know?
I served in Guyana for the Peace Corps.
Oh, wow.
So I heard all about Jonestown like over and over again, which was like 40 years before I went, you know. It's just like, seriously, like the one thing that Americans know this little country for.
That's what moms do, right? That's kind of their job. Yeah.
It is their job. Yeah. You know, there's no one else is going to look out for you like that, I guess.
No, I think as for San Francisco is concerned, I'm not trying to shit on the conference, but I'd be more apprehensive. I mean, everyone I know that's gone to San Francisco in like the last 2 years is talking about what a state it is, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was there last year, hadn't been in quite a while. And I mean, it was, I was blown away. I mean, I just, my jaw was on the floor. I didn't know what to think. I, you know, it was pretty bad just between my Airbnb and the conference venue and like the couple places we hung out. But then I stayed an extra day and I have a old friend, like brother. We were in each other's weddings and everything. And he lives in Oakland. It was his birthday. It was great timing. So we went out, him and a buddy of his and me, we went out to this great show, Anderson .Paak, in San Francisco. And it was downtown. We had an amazing dinner at this like plush, like crazy amazing restaurant. And just like totally high time preference that shit that night. We were walking from this like, you know, posh restaurant to this conference venue, and it was just kind of through the heart of downtown, and the just juxtaposition of that restaurant that we were in eating this $300 meal, you know, $350 for the three of us or something crazy like that, and then walking to the conference the show venue, I saw, and I'm not exaggerating, it was easily 1,000 homeless people on the streets, just lining the streets.
1,000? How long was the walk?
Easily. You know, it was probably a mile or so.
What?
Yeah. Holy, I mean, shit. It was insane. It was just street after street after street. And you could look down the other, you know, the cross streets. You'd look down and there was more people there. And like, and then ahead was the city hall, which looks like a big sort of government building, right? Like a state capitol in San Francisco. And they had it all splashed with rainbow colors. The Pride weekend was that weekend. And it was just, I mean, just the juxtaposition of everything that was going on. And then the show that I was at, and it was, you know, kind of mind blowing. It was a San Francisco night, man. It blew my mind. I mean, the next day I was talking to Rohan. I was just kind of debriefing. He's in it, you know, all the time. He works at a hospital in San Francisco, so he sees this all the time. And I was just like, man, I had fresh eyes, and I was just like, this is nuts. This is crazy. And he's like, yeah, you're right. Like, I kind of lose perspective sometimes, but this is crazy.
Yeah, man, I'm sure the conference will be great. And, you know, obviously there's going to be a ton of awesome people and stuff going on, but I can't lie. Like it puts me off going to San Francisco for sure.
Yeah. 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 I hear that, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be a good time to be there with Bitcoiners, but yeah, maybe, I don't know. It seems like they're kind of locked in San Francisco, but we'll see what BTC Media comes up with if they want to switch it up someday. The conference though itself is amazing.
Sure. So. You've been a couple times?
Last year was the first time they've had it in quite a while. Oh. I think they hosted one in like 2013, 2014. And then BTC Media kind of fell off the Bitcoin only wagon, you could say, to put it lightly. They sort of found religion after the big crash,
right,
and realized that they should, you know, come back to Bitcoin only.
Right.
So they renewed the conference, and that was the first one last year in a while.
Cool.
So
cool.
Yeah, man.
Well, you're pretty busy these days, right? You got since we last spoke, are you full time at Swan? Is that
as of next Monday?
Oh, really?
I'm handing off my last former client this Friday. So as of next Monday, I'm full-time Bitcoin.
Congrats,
which
man.
Is super, super exciting. Thank you, man.
That's awesome. That. You must be super stoked about that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm super stoked. It's going to be a ton of work. It already is a ton of work, but it's fun. It's fun work. So, and Corey and Jan are amazing guys. You know, they both have families, so they like understand that you got to be super productive with the time you have, but you also got to, like, you know, not miss out on your child's, you know, your kid's childhood things like that too. So, you know, which is not super, I think it's probably a little bit rare, in startup world. So I'm, you know, glad to, they're good guys. So I'm glad to be working with them.
Yeah. And then you recently launched Bitcoin Best, right?
Bitcoiners Best.
Yeah. Bitcoiners Best, you and a few others.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cool. Just a little side project that we've been working on. I really just kind of had the idea, and then, at Binary Dreaming, I probably shouldn't say his name actually. So yeah, at Binary Dreaming on Twitter, he really took the ball and ran with it. And this guy named Pablo, this amazing, brilliant, genius coder from Spain, just like dove right in, and they jammed this thing out in like 6 weeks after. I mean, we had been kind of tossing it around for a while, but then when we got those pair together, it was like, boom, magic happened. So they really did it.
I love it, man. There's, you know, Andy and I talked about this a couple of days ago, but whenever, assuming things play out as they have in the past, whenever, you know, the real craziness reignites again, I mean, noobs are going to have so many more resources than they had last time around. You know, there's just, there's so many books and so many podcasts and so many websites and resources and curated, you know, content stuff. Like, you know, I go back to like Gigi's Bitcoin resources sometimes. I'm like, holy shit. Like, this is
right,
insanely
so much.
Extensive. And it's amazing. Great.
It is great. It's fantastic. Yeah. I think like what Bitcoin did started like mid to late 2017. I think TFTC kind of started around mid 2017. So like, I mean, they weren't there. They were brand new podcasts right in the middle of the craziness, you know? And Stefan came in, and there was, you know, a slew of great other podcasts. And man, yours is like, it's a personal favorite of mine. I just love your style. I think you've had a couple, what was that episode where, I can't remember his name right now, but he hosts, debates.
Gene.
Gene. Oh.
Fuck yeah, it's escaping me. Gene Epstein.
Gene Epstein. Oh my God, that episode was killer, man. Like, you guys were going at each other. Was like the way it should be, you know, steel manning these two positions and like finding some disagreement. And it was just a breath of fresh air in, you know, Bitcoin podcast, which can become, you know, just like, you know, obviously we're in this echo chamber. We love it here, but, you know, we're interviewing the same people all the time. It was nice to see some fresh faces.
Gene's a fiery one, man. He's like 78 or in his 80s or something, and he's still, you know, he's a whippersnapper. So it was fun. It was fun to push back on him a little bit and have some of his like attitude come out. And yeah, that was a super enjoyable one. But man, first of all, thank you, of course. But you know, I would echo the same thing with your pod. I mean, like you said, we are like speaking to a lot of the same people in terms of guests and our audience. There's a lot of overlap, of course, too. But yours is one that I keep at the very top of the list. And I love what you're doing, and I'm excited that you're able to now have your formal, you know, quote unquote formal work in the Bitcoin realm as well, because I'm sure that's going to enhance the, you know, the quality and the reach and all the rest of it of your pod. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. What are some other pods that that stick out in your memory as particularly fun for you? I mean, it's like, you know, choosing between your kids, but like some that were like particularly fun for you that you really, really enjoyed personally, you know, deeply.
Well, I mean, I really enjoyed ours. I do really enjoy most of them, but like the one with you, the one with Guy, the one with Vortex was fun because, you know, on that one, he talks so fast and he's you know, he's very articulate and he's obviously very well informed. And so like for me, that one, I was like just trying to keep up, and it just ended up being a conversation where there wasn't much break. It was just, he would say something, I'd be like, holy fuck. And then I'd say something, he'd be like, oh, holy fuck. And it just kind of went down that way. But I mean, I'm blanking on all of my guests right now, but I've enjoyed a lot of them. But in terms of fun, like I just, you know, the one with Gene where he was calling me lame brain, John Valse and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was great.
It was one of the best Bitcoin podcast episodes I've ever listened to. So you guys got to go dig that one up for sure. I loved that one.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right. Well, I want to get into your story, man. Like I, you know, haven't really dug into it. We got into it a little bit on the pod that you and I did together. But you know, you're already interviewing me a little bit in this one. So we're here to hear about you and from you, man. So, you know, tell me, let's go from the beginning. Let's dive into this Bitcoin story of yours, man. The world wants to know how John Vallis got into Bitcoin.
I'm sure they're waiting with bated breath. well, man, you could always trace it back like much further, you know, just kind of what inspired you to be the type of person to have the curiosity to come across Bitcoin. But like the most clear delineation in my mind, like that kind of kicked off the rabbit hole was, in high school, I was always super curious. I was a big reader in high school. So I kind of like thought school was bullshit and I did a lot of reading, you know, on my own time. And I smoked a bunch of weed too in high school. Just loved, like, you know, I didn't abuse it, but on the weekend when all my homework was done, when all my sports and fitness and working out was done, you know, I'd usually like smoke a joint with my girlfriend and just chill and stay in and have a great time like that. You know,
I hear that, man.
Right. So that's kind of, that was the nature of my high school life. And, so Mark Emery was this, famous, he was called the Prince of Pot in Canada. So he started a magazine and a kind of an empire called Cannabis Culture. And it was a magazine and like videos and website. And he also sold cannabis seeds around the world, I guess on a pretty big scale. And he became the number one most wanted in the US, right? Because, and they, you know, they claim that he was supplying whatever portion of the market through his selling of these seeds across the border. Anyways, he was charged. He was extradited to the US. And as he was fighting his extradition, which eventually he was extradited, went to jail, he's out now. I'm not exactly sure how many years he did, maybe 5 years or something like that. But one time he was pleading his case and he had a Ron Paul t-shirt on. And I was watching his video and like, who's this? Like, why is this guy wearing a shirt with some other guy's name on it? And it had the American flag. And I could tell like he was running for public office or something like that. So I looked into Ron Paul, blah, blah, blah. You get to what, you know, Ron Paul talking about the Fed.
Right.
Go down that rabbit hole, read The Creature from Jekyll Island, go on Amazon, get all these books about it. And then, you know, that I became kind of a gold bug after that, because that was the only thing that people were talking about at the time in terms of a hedge against this crazy, you know, system that had been constructed. And then the Bitcoin part is a little bit foggy, but all I know is that a buddy of mine came to, so I was already a hardened gold bug, right? And a buddy of mine came to me one day when I was home, and he, like, we were very much into psychedelics, right? And, you know, and by very much, I mean, once a year, we would have like a quote unquote heroic dose, a high dose of psychedelics in a very controlled setting, very intentional, non-recreational, all those disclaimers, because people hear that word, I think everyone thinks something different, but we were very like serious about it.
Right.
And it was a very like personal development sort of pursuit, not recreational. But so one day he came to me and he was like, "Have you heard about DMT? It sounds interesting. Should we look into it? Should we try it?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's look into it and let's possibly try it." So we did all of our research and we were like, "Yeah, you know, we're psychonauts after all, so we should probably give it a whirl." And
did you say psychonauts?
Psychonauts, yeah.
Nice.
That's a term like, for psychedelic explorers.
Nice. I've never heard that, but I fucking love it.
And so then he looked into it and he was like, "Yo, dude, there's this website online that seems like we can buy some DMT, and all we need to do is get our hands on some of this Bitcoin stuff." And I was like, "What is Bitcoin?" Like, and you know, this story has been played out by so many people. I mean, the Silk Road was, you know, how a lot of people got their early exposure to Bitcoin. And I looked into it. And at the time, it just seemed like it was too much of a pain in the ass to get. So I was like, yeah. I don't need to try DMT that much. So we just left it, and it never happened. And then I guess the next time I considered it was Andreas' videos, like maybe in whenever he started doing them. I'm not sure if it was like 12 or 13 or whatever.
Something like that.
And was intrigued and was even like, I was telling this to Andy the other day, but I was even more sold by the way that Andreas was speaking, not so much like the content. I understood, I could appreciate some of what he was saying, but like the technical aspect I couldn't appreciate as well, even though Andreas doesn't get too technical. But you know, I listened to this dude and I was like, this guy's genuine, he's articulate, he seems informed and educated, so this might be something worth looking into. And so, but he, this is the one thing I hate Andreas for. Of course, it's not his fault, but in the early days, he'd always say like, "Don't go out and buy it. Just like educate yourself, learn about it." Like that kind of a shtick. I wish he'd be like, "Stop, press pause on this video right now and just go out and get as much as you can and then come back and learn about it."
I guess he was always just like, "That's implicit, right?" So I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
But not everybody. Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't want to get wrecked either.
I know. I'm just being silly, kind of. I'll pick that bone with him if I ever get the chance to speak to him.
But he'll love that.
Yeah. But anyway, so long story short, I listened to him for years. And then I was living in Shanghai, and the opportunity, or Bobby Lee was living in Shanghai at the time too. And somehow we got connected through a mutual friend. And I was interested enough at that time and had been following it that's when I recorded my first Bitcoin interview. It was 2015 in the fall with Bobby Lee, when Bitcoin was at like 250 or something like that. And nice. And so that's...
So you were in the game a while ago, and then you got out and got back in.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, like as with like a lot of the non-Bitcoin interviews I've done, at like especially around then, it was just because I enjoy speaking with people about interesting subject matter, you know, so
right.
Psychedelics or Bitcoin or whatever the hell else. Like, I just think it's fun to press record and have a chat with someone and throw it out there. So
yeah. All right. Back to Bobby Lee.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So, you know, we had the chat, and I actually published it on my podcast just so people could see like what my first Bitcoin interview was like. And then after that, you know, I mean, you know what it's like, but I was interested, but I wasn't like sold 100%, right? I didn't have the context to have the level of conviction that I have now. And so I started dabbling, but I was still like way more into gold because I just felt that was safer. And, you know, I've been around longer and just so much more certainty around it. And then 16 happened, and I've actually interviewed Bobby Lee. I know he's not the most popular person these days, but I interviewed him every year since 15. So I've interviewed him 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just amazing. Kind of by happenstance, because we've always been at some point throughout the year in the same place. And I'm always like, you know, it's been a year's a long time in the Bitcoin space. Why don't we have a chat?
Yeah.
And the last time we spoke, project that he's currently working on, Ballet, was he hadn't disclosed it yet. He was kind of in stealth mode, is the term he used. And anyways, so yeah. And then
that ballet crypto is not well received among the Bitcoiners.
Right.
For obvious for real reasons, but you know.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll move
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And but yeah, from there, man, it was just like I thought I was kind of on my own. Like I've always consumed everything I could find on it. And then I think I mentioned this when we first talked, but like early 2019, I stumbled into Bitcoin Twitter somehow. I guess just, you know, you reach a threshold and you're like, oh, this is a thing. This is an entity.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had found like my people, you know, people that were seeing things in a similar way that I was. And I got super excited about it. And of course, you start a podcast. That's
yep.
what you do. And you encounter all these people that you want to talk to and, you know, share your enthusiasm with. So that's basically
it's irresistible, man.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just irresistible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you found Bitcoin Twitter. I'm glad you started your podcast. Yeah, there's another good new one on the scene too. Daniel Prince, he's really crushing it. Like, I just, people who, you know, get drawn into the Bitcoin podcast scene is just really cool, man. Bitcoin Tina calls the fraternity of Bitcoin podcasters. And that, you know, I kind of like balk at the term fraternity a little bit. I'm like, we need to, you know, make this a group and like non-gender specific, but basically it is at this point. You know, there's a few, like Anita Posh has a great podcast. I listen to hers all the time.
Yeah.
Great interviewer. But yeah, it'd be cool to get some more female voices, women's voices out here in the scene, but you know, yeah. It's Bitcoin right now. This is the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, like, sure, I guess, like, I don't give a fuck what you are. Like, all I care about is what you're expressing and how you're expressing it. So like, you know, maybe it would be cool if there was more girls doing Bitcoin podcasts or more black people or more whatever. And I'm sure that will happen, you know, because this is ultimately,
exactly.
This is ultimately going to be a universal good, a universal phenomenon that everybody engages in some capacity, or at least that's what we think is going to happen. But, you know, I don't really care what color or anything.
Yeah. I mean, I don't either. This is a meritocracy and it should be.
Right.
I guess I'm just saying, like, I'm looking forward
sure.
to that happening. And it will. I mean, it'll happen because this thing is irresistible, like we were just saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to diversify in the voices and stuff. And, like, yeah, I mean, I don't want anybody to get me wrong out there, but I'm not,
I know what you mean. Totally. I do get excited when I see different people pop up that are a little bit outside your typical quote unquote Bitcoiner. Right. And they start talking about Bitcoin the way that we're talking about Bitcoin. I'm like, oh fuck yeah. Like someone like you is into it.
It's just more evidence that, like, you know, the shit's spreading.
Right.
And that's what I want. That's what I'm excited about. That's what I want to see.
100%.
So, like, I'm, you know, I think it's just another signal that, like, this thing is mass adoption, or like, I hate that term mass adoption, but, like, you know, Bitcoin's growing and expanding and it'll happen. It'll do it on its own pace.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a little bit about, you know, the growth of Bitcoin and the pace and everything. Like, what do you think about our current, like, macro situation, how it's going to affect Bitcoin's growth? I mean, we've got all kinds of crazy shit going on. We got this US presidential election happening, which, you know, I tweeted about today. I don't think, you know, obviously that the US presidential election matters at all when it comes to Bitcoin. There's going to be no difference between a Bernie Sanders or a Joe Biden or Donald Trump. We're on this, you know, inevitable at this point path toward the doom of the US dollar. It's just a matter of when at this point.
Yeah.
You can't change that. No one person can change that. No president can change that. And, you know, the only popular uprising to fix the money is a leaderless one here in Bitcoin. So yeah, I mean, what do you see happening, man? What's on the horizon? Like, what does your gut say about this coming decade? It's going to be crazy.
I think you're right. It's going to be crazy. And you know, you could sum, I'll articulate it a little bit, but you could sum it up by just saying, like, Bitcoin is the constant, in my opinion, of course, Bitcoin is the constant. It's the North Star. It's the thing that's going to keep doing what it does no matter what. And I'm not even talking about price. I'm just talking about the way that it functions and it operates, right? Blocks will keep getting produced roughly every 10 minutes. And unless something catastrophic happens. And in a world where there's so little certainty, where you can place your faith and your trust and your expectations in so little, because literally everything is either being directly manipulated or is changing as a result of manipulation in other areas, you know, I feel like this is what's happening. More and more people are realizing that it is the constant. It is the compass. It's the North Star. So, and in a market as we have, that will probably mean that the price will continue its upward march to satisfy that demand. But you know, short term, you're right, man. Like, of course, things are nuts, and nobody knows. Like, I tweeted out something today, but like, this is Bitcoin was obviously born kind of in the ashes or right in the middle of the last financial crisis. But it's been this marvelous incubation period, which has been like the 10, 12 year bull market, you know, the longest in history. So it hasn't really been tested. It's had these minor skirmishes like being banned by China or like, you know, all this kind of stuff, but it's never really been tested. Like, will people, will they treat it as a constant or a North Star? And I think they will, because most of us in this space, as much as we have to be careful about, you know, deluding ourselves because we want something to happen so much. And I think most of us are like, yes, we're enthusiastic and we're excited and we get overzealous on Twitter, but that's just that's kind of having fun. That's part of the game. But the fact of the matter is like, I have never encountered another group of people that is more like intellectually curious and informed and well-read and broadly informed on a number of different subjects. And then are synthesizing that information into a perception of the way things are and the way they might be in the future. And it's remarkable at how similar that is amongst many of us. You know, there are minor differences, but many of us are seeing the same bigger picture. So I think that trend is going to continue. Like, I don't think we're outliers. We may be outliers a bit just by virtue of the fact that we're a little bit early, but I think reason will dawn on people at some point, either by necessity or first via some other motivation. And people will see that, like, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to put your hard-earned money in paper currency that has already lost most of its value, but certainly we're moving into an era where it's going to accelerate? Or are you going to trust third parties that are notoriously corrupt and that, like, you're going to look, people will be informed let me put it this way. The deterioration of things will cause people that typically don't spend much time trying to understand how things work or that kind of thing, it'll force them to gain a little bit of better understanding of that. And you deploy a little bit of reason and a little bit of being informed on top of that. And I feel like most roads, if not all, lead to Bitcoin. I think it's going to be chaotic, and I'm not looking forward at all to a nasty transition, which, you know, that it'd be great if we could avoid that. But, you know, the system is fairly not only ingrained, but, you know, just it's difficult to see how we might avoid a hard landing with everything. But I think through the ashes will emerge, you know, Bitcoin in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, man. I mean, I've got to imagine that the landing would be way harder without this alternative.
Oh, right? I mean, so like, we'd just be fucked without.
I mean, right? You'd just be totally fucked. I mean, the plane is, you know, like basically crashing right now, and like we're all here, you know, like we're talking about it, but like the developers of the protocol are like all just like, you know, like making a brand new engine as this thing's just like, you know, about to crash into the side of a mountain, and like it's gonna like just pull up just in time, and like, you know, just like scrape the bottom of the fucking, you know, hull of this ship that we're on, this plane that we're on, and like, you know, it's gonna save our asses just barely. And thank God, you know, it came at the time that it did. You know, Alex Gladstein on last week was like, I said something like it, you know, Bitcoin came just the right time. And he's like, well, it could have come a lot earlier. It would have been better for a lot of people.
Sure. And look, man, I mean, you know, a lot of people are misdiagnosing the problem, and no matter how clear the solution becomes, that's still going to be the case. So, you know, this whole idea of citadels, some version of that may play out. It may not be as delineated or something, but you know, there's going to be people whose heads remain in the sand, who remain deluded, who remain, you know, misguided, misinformed, et cetera, no matter how dire the circumstances get. You know, look, for a lot of people around the world today, a lot of people in the US, a lot of people in Canada, the circumstances are pretty darn bad. Like those people that you were just referring to in San Francisco, like they're not like terrible, just worthless, stupid people. They're people that didn't have support structures like perhaps you and I had They didn't have an upbringing like we had. They didn't have the same opportunities. They, you know, and they went down a road that ended in sleeping on the side of the road using drugs in San Francisco. But that's not how they saw their life, you know, and working out from the get-go.
It's got to be noted that, you know, ironically, that this all is happening for them, particularly in San Francisco, in like the cradle of what has been the driver of the global economy, right. You know, the technology sector for the past, you know, few decades.
Yeah.
And look what's, you know, become of that. It's just,
yeah,
it's hard to understand and fathom.
It's ironic. But I guess my point there is just that, like, those people are hurting now. You know, we're talking about, right, like maybe things get bad, you know, in a year, 5 years, 10 years, but like a lot of people are in the depths right now, and they, you know, it's great that Bitcoin is here and that the resources are here, that if they achieve any amount of, you know, mental clarity, that maybe they'll stumble upon it. But like most people who are struggling right now, I feel are misdiagnosing the issue, and they're pushing for, you know, more government. They're pushing for,
yep,
greater abuse of, you know, the monetary instruments all around the world and that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's all you can do is take care of you and yours and try to contribute to educating, building whatever the type of world that you would like to see, and that has the at least the chance to help other people. But there's gonna be pain.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, any transition like this, I mean, this is a epical transition in human history, so it's not going to come without some pain. And it's going to happen, as Bitcoin Tino always says, it's going to happen a lot faster than any of us imagine, because we're in this, and we talked about this at the end of your episode too, with you and I did this sort of pace of exponential change that just kind of stacks on top of each other, right? Technological change. And I mean, we're just at this sort of crescendo of incredibly quick technological change. It's still only accelerating. And so Bitcoin's being built on top of all of that, you know, exponential technology. And it, you know, in and of itself has the same properties of exponential tech. It's got the network effects, you know, quite a few of them that are kind of stacked up and self-reinforcing. And so, you know, that's a good thing. I mean, that's a good thing. That is promising to me. That's optimistic, I think,
yeah,
to me, that that Bitcoin will be ready to take that burden sooner than we think it might be, mm-hmm, to bear that burden. And yeah, it could play out really fast over this next decade, because, you know, if the shit hits the fan, that just, you know, speeds things up in terms of Bitcoin adoption. And, you know, when people question whether or not, like, hey, is it ready? You know, we're putting everything into place now, like things that, you know, tech that needs to be in place to really be able to scale this thing. Lightning, of course, and then Schnorr and Taproot, and, you know, there's some more tech on the horizon that's going to, you know, reduce the bloat, or I guess make the blockchain more efficient, and, you know, keep the ability to run full nodes on a phone with a, you know, 5G connection will be easy. Yeah. You know, we can probably afford to increase the block size again a little bit at that point. But yeah, it's happening really fast, and I think Tina's right.
It is. And that, like, when you're in it, it can sometimes seem like it's not happening fast, right? Because we just, once we realize something, or even once we desire something, all we can think about is, mm-hmm, the gap between where we are and when we have that thing. And we want that gap to be as short as possible. And so, oh my God, it didn't happen this year or next year or the next year. This is a long time. But like, it's not. 10 years, 11 years ago, Bitcoin didn't exist. You know, and look where it's at today. And so, even though I'm somewhat cautious, because I remember in 2008 thinking, this is it, like this whole house of cards is coming down, and, you know, yep, it was preserved. And, you know, now this time I think, like, it's got to be it this time. But who knows? Like, you know, things can stay weird for a long time. And but that being said, I mean, my feeling, even if it's not like a, you know, well-constructed rational thought, is this decade things are really going to happen fast. Like, I've spoken with a number of Bitcoiners that think this is going to happen slower than we think. Like, it's going to take decades, mm-hmm, and, you know, it's,
yep,
over that time frame. But I don't know. I feel like, you know, that quote, Bitcoin is the bubble, is the Bitcoin is the pin, not the bubble, right?
Right. Yeah.
I feel like that pressure that it's putting on the existing system is just going to become more and more obvious, and it's going to show more and more cracks as a result of that pressure. And I don't know. I think it's going to happen faster than we might, right? Like at this moment in time, we can actually see. And such is the case with exponential change, right? As you were mentioning.
So, exactly. You know. Yeah. Yeah. We think linearly, our brains aren't really capable of understanding exponential technologies at their, like, you know, apps, like for what they actually are. You can try, but that's just not the way our brains are wired.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Parker was talking about this. Parker Lewis was a couple of weeks ago. And this was something that was new to me. And I thought it was brilliant. I've been thinking about it for, you know, since then, for 2 weeks now. But Bitcoin is basically sucking the lifeblood out of the fiat system. And the lifeblood of the fiat system is debt, mm-hmm. right? And so what's going to happen is over time, as people are recognizing, you know, what's happening here, and that there's this, you know, the truth of sound money is playing out and exerting its truth on our economy, people are going to take debt to buy Bitcoin, right? And debt is what fuels this fiat system. All right. So if you take debt out of the fiat system, but you don't use it, you know, in the fiat system, then it's not effective, right? It's the quantitative easing doesn't work unless you can give money, you know, out to people and corporations, at, you know, low or negative interest rates, and then have them use it, right? And then that's what kind of allows the slow inflation over time. And, you know, these monetary, what do they call it? Modern monetary theory and Keynesian, economists, they just basically say, like, look, we're going to keep the inflation rate at this point, and fuck all those people, you know, who in 20 years are going to, like, you know, have wages that are, you know, don't meet productivity anymore. And the, you know, their value of their labor is worth, you know, 80 or 20% of what it was 20 years ago. Fuck all those people. We're good. You know? So if you can't do that, if you can't use that debt and deploy it in the economy, and it just gets stashed away in Bitcoin, you know, it just accelerates that process of the, you know, that march to the, you know, the fall of the USD. It's just
sure
sucking that lifeblood out. It's amazing.
Yeah. I'm totally receptive to that way of looking at it. And I mean, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, like, you started, you know, this conversation off with that about what's going on now, but, like, you know, the 10 year just dropped below 1%, and there's QE by whatever name you want to call it. And, you know, black mm-hmm. swan events, whether the coronavirus is really a concern or not, people are treating it as such. And, you know, all this stuff going on around the world. And, you know, I just think, as you just articulated, that's going to be one reason why there's pressure put on it. But we're near the top of, like, the greatest bull market in history, right? And
right.
But the government is so anxious about the precariousness of that situation that we just had an emergency 50 basis point cut,
right?
Right? Like they just don't jive really in normal circumstances.
Yeah. That's a kind of move you make when, you know, your like emergency measures haven't stopped the bleeding. Right. I mean,
it's like, oh no, like we got to keep it up here, guys. Like we really got to do our best. Like,
because
because if we don't, then people are going to know, then it's going to unwind. And so
it's just open air below.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's crazy times,
man. That's crazy. Okay. I've been wanting to go back to this real quick. We'll get back to Bitcoin, but I want to take a little break from our Bitcoin conversation to hear more about DMT.
what do you want to know?
So, well, okay. So I have, similar to you, used various psychedelics, mushrooms, LSD in, you know, to kind of exploratory ways, very intentional, not like partying at raves or something, but like, you know, in a setting with a couple of good friends and experimenting and kind of journeying through our brains and whatever. Mm-hmm. Definitely had very, you know, I guess personal breakthroughs during those sessions and afterwards, you know, sober times too, but like revisiting those sessions with those friends that I experienced it with, even years and years later, you know, get together with those friends again and sort of surface new insights from those experiences. So I think it's certainly a very powerful experience to have. So how was DMT different for you than like these kind of like LSD or mushrooms?
Right. So there's two kinds of DMT, right? One is just straight up DMT, dimethyltryptamine. The other one is called 5-MeO DMT, 5-methoxydimethyltryptamine. And one is apparently available in a very broad variety of plants. And my first exposure was via ayahuasca. So in 2008 and 2009, I went down to South America for 4 months on both occasions. And the first time was kind of dip my toes in the water. The second time I was actually going to spend all 4 months in the jungle in the village of the shaman that I had connected with. And and I ended up not staying. I stayed for a month because I felt I had my fill. But so the ayahuasca brew is actually two parts. They'll add in a bunch of other tree barks and stuff because they say it's the spirit of this or that. And like I don't really buy into the labels that people put on this stuff. Like it's a key that allows me to access a certain area of my consciousness that otherwise I can't or is very difficult to access. And it's a very personal experience. And beyond that, I don't assume to be able to put certain labels on it. But nevertheless, one's a leaf. It's called Socotria viridis, like that's its botanical name. And then that's called chacruna, I think, in the Aboriginal language. But anyways, it's the leaf, and then there's the vine. And the vine contains something called harmine, and that allows the DMT in the leaf to become orally active. And the botanical name of the vine is Banisteriopsis caapi. But so that allows it to be consumed orally in a drink. And it also extends the life of it in your system. So, you know, the ayahuasca experience is like anywhere between 4 and 7 hours long. And it's a very powerful psychedelic experience. It's incredibly personal. You know, I try to avoid placing too much value on and talking about what I quote unquote saw. Cause like, I don't feel like that's incredibly like super relevant, at least not for me. For me, it's more about like how I felt. And for me in these trips, like the first part is always clearing out the cobwebs. Like to really, in my opinion, to really go the full distance in these sort of experiences, you have to let go of everything that you think you are. This concept of ego death is pretty popular in the literature of these experiences. And basically it's just, you know, all the things that you use to associate with and identify you as you, your name, your nationality, your sports team, your race, your sex, like you have to let go of it all, it seems, to get to the apex of the experience. And that can be really unsettling, of course, because we use all those things to be comfortable with being a fucking human in the world. And we use them to construct our perception of the world. And so when all that goes away, you feel naked, like to the core, in the most vulnerable way possible. And to really get naked, you have to confront a lot of your bullshit, even like latent stuff that you're not even usually consciously aware of. And it pops up and it takes whatever form. It might be a scary, aggressive face, or it might just be a feeling of anxiety or insecurity or whatever. And so, you know, the first couple of times was when I felt I confronted a lot of the stuff that I hadn't known was there. And now on an annual basis, it's just like clearing out the cobwebs. Like what over the last year did I neglect? Did I not like develop enough on? Did I need to revisit? Whatever. And then for me, I get to this place of, if you take away all the fantastical language around psychedelics, and I just feel like I'm delivered to a place of like pristine peace and like unity with the awareness of the moment that is happening. And I know that's like, people will be like, what the fuck is this woo-woo like bullshit? But it's hard to articulate it any other way. As you know, these experiences are ineffable, right? They can't be described. So we can only kind of whisper from one end of the Grand Canyon and hope that it's somewhat translated on the other end. But, you know, it's just a tremendous sense of peace, stillness, and awareness in the present moment. And it's amazing. And, but back to your original question. So one form of DMT is that is in the ayahuasca. You can also get it in a crystalline form that you can smoke. And that's a much faster acting experience. It's like between 5 and 15 minutes. And that one is usually a bit more visual. Some people have reported like a landscape, but just a freestanding landscape emerging in their mind's eye that there's things to see there and observe and structures and even, you know, entities of different kinds. That's not been my experience. But, and then the other one is 5-MeO, which is, it's a secretion of the Sonoran desert toad. So you milk the glands, you dry it out, and then you smoke that in like a glass bowl of some kind. And I did that in Prague in 2018 with probably the guy who's most well known for it. He's been on some of the Vice documentaries and stuff. And that was like the most jarring and powerful experience that I've ever felt in my life. You know, my preference is for mushrooms because you have like 5 hours to really get into the experience and negotiate with it and get to where you're maybe trying to go with it. And in a mushroom experience, like maybe 2 hours are the super intense part where you're, and by intense, I just mean like it's the waves are the highest so that the surfing is the best sort of thing, you know? But with the 5-MeO, it's like 10, 15 minutes long, but it's like a rocket ship, man. Like by the time you exhale, he gets you to like suck in 3 times. And by the time you exhale the last one, you can feel the G-force on your body. And so like my neck and my shoulders were like pushed down because I felt such a upward force. And most people just fall down into a sack of potatoes. Because he did a number that day. We were all in the lovely house in Prague, had like a private back garden. And we were all just there kind of taking turns. And most people just fall down as soon as they exhale. Like it just overwhelms them and he helps them lie down. And then he does his like chanting or whatever. I managed to stay standing, but like you could feel the force of the experience. And then again, like disclaimer, incoming woo-woo language, but you know, you feel like you dissolve into the energy and the fullness of the now.
You can't avoid that kind of language when you talk about this stuff, man. You just can't.
I know, but I hate it because like I'm a very rational person and I'm a big skeptic. So I don't say these things.
It's perfect. It's perfectly rational, right? I mean, this is what you experienced. It's not like, I don't know. It's not woo-woo because it's practical experience right. That you're trying to describe. Yeah. And you know, man, being human is fucking weird. All right. It's just fucking weird. That's why we have so much, poetry and art and essays and books and just, you know, all the way back to the Stoics and before that, even, you know, the stuff that survived, the religious literature, it's all just struggling to try to like make sense of what the fuck is going on in our heads.
That's a great point,
you know?
And actually to go back to your original question, like how my Bitcoin journey started. And I was like, well, let's start with like the most obvious. The full answer to that question is when I was, I guess like first year university, like, you know, in my early 20s, I had, you know, I was always a voracious reader, read about, you know, all the lobbying that goes on in all the different industries and the geopolitics and Tales from an Economic Hitman and Jared Diamond about how societies collapse. Like I read it all. And I was like, man, the world is in a tough spot, you know? And then when you learn about the banking, international banking system and stuff, I just kept thinking like, what could possibly be motivating these? Now, back then I was a little bit more on the, like, it's all one big conspiracy cabal sort of bent, which I've softened on that. I think it's probably less so like that, as much as it might appear sometimes, but nevertheless, I thought like, why are people, what's motivating them for even more wealth and even more power? Like it can't just be the fact that you can buy another mansion or like another plane or whatever. Like it's gotta be something more. And that was actually what led me down the role of looking at these ancient cultures and societies, which you just mentioned, and seeing like, well, what were like these rites and rituals of the elites of the Egyptian period or the Greek period or the Roman, like they all had these like, or many of them had like these mystery schools or these sacred rites or these secret rites. And I was like, maybe, you know, maybe the answer to my question lies in those things. What the fuck were those all about? And that's, you know, that's kind of what led me to the psychedelic rabbit hole. And whether or not that's what those societies and groups of people were engaging in, I mean, who knows? We may never know. It makes a decent bit of sense, although psychedelics to me kind of inspire a sense of unity rather than a sense of dominance or wanting to, you know, separate yourself from everybody else. But nevertheless, that's how I got caught on that bent. And, you know, there's a lot of overlap. I've said this a couple times on a few different pods now, but you know the feeling when you're talking to a complete no-coiner and they say like, why are you so interested in Bitcoin, dude? And you're like, and maybe you give them a spiel, you know it's going to land on deaf ears, but you just try. You're like, well, have you ever thought about this and this and this and this? And did you know this and this and this? And they're just like, dude, what are you talking about? You know, that's this very same thing with psychedelics, because you can't, it's impossible to understand it until you experience it, right? And whatever that line that Morpheus had in the Matrix, right? Like you can't be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. Like it's that. Yeah. So talking about it, you're always going to seem a bit like a weirdo, whether it's Bitcoin or psychedelics or probably a few other subjects in the world that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, it's that same feeling. You brought it home for me, and I was about to do the same thing. You know, like the way you were describing the psychedelics is just so similar to the way Bitcoin makes you feel, right? Like, you know, you used words like, you know, G-forces, you know, confronting demons and cobwebs, the sacred rites and rituals, which we're developing now, you know, shout out Friar Haas, GG, stacking sats, you know, stack sats for salvation, etc. There's these kind of, you know, religious aspects to what's evolving in the Bitcoin culture, for lack of a better word.
And a transformative effect on people's behavior and personalities.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
maybe if not, absolutely. If nothing more, like perhaps nothing more than that. I mean, how, I'm sure you talk about it with people that are in your pod, but like I ask everyone in what ways Bitcoin has changed their behavior. And like, I'd say 95% say that it's like drastically changed their behavior in certain domains, and that's an ongoing process. So who knows what it's going to result in 10 years. And so very similar overlap to psychedelics. I mean, it fundamentally changes how people see the world and how they treat themselves and how they treat others and how they form relationships. And sounds a lot like Bitcoin.
Man, the red pill meme is real, you know, like it's ayahuasca, it's DMT, it's a red pill. It's all these things. I mean, it's just, it's transformative. It changes you. It's changing the world, by the transitive property of changing us as individuals, you know, collectively. It's going to change the planet too. It's going to transform things. And yeah, you know, I think there's going to be some shit in between in this transition period, but you know, that's why I, the intro to this podcast is the dawn of the Bitcoin Renaissance. I firmly believe that, you know, however long it takes, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, 150 years from now, the world is going to, this human society is going to be just changed for the better in so many ways, you know, and like we're still, you know, it's not, I'm not a Pollyanna. This is not utopia that we're going to, you know, develop here. We're still human. We're going to struggle with all of, you know, all the things that being human entails. All of those struggles will still be there, but the way we're going to unburden ourselves from, you know, making that so much harder than it has to be for ourselves, right?
100%. And you see, that Bitcoin fixes this meme, right? That's at least partially from, we recognize the changes that we feel as a result of interacting with this thing. And whether or not we integrate those changes into our lives on day one, or whether it's a process or whatever, but we see the different ways it's innervating who we are and how we interact with the world and how we interact with people. And then we look out on the world and we see, you know, things happening and behavior of people. And we're like, oh, I know why that's happening. That's clearly a result of whatever. That's clearly a result of whatever. And then you're like, Bitcoin would at least dramatically reduce the incentive for that type of behavior, or dramatically reduce like right? the perversion of thought and behavior that's, like Bitcoin would undo the cause of that perversion of thought and behavior. And like, so that's why I think we see this meme proliferate, because everybody is feeling it in themselves and it's allowing them to see it out in the greater world. And you're like, yeah, Bitcoin would fix that a lot. And that.
It's so true, man. It's...
Take a drink, Brady. You haven't had one in a while.
It does this to me too. Like, it just makes me speechless. Cause I, you know, sometimes I sit back and I'm just like, you got to be present in that moment of awe, you know, like what we can ramble. I mean, we could sit here and speak a million miles an hour about what we're experiencing, because it's there's so much, right? It's just, it's like Neo getting the upload, you know, he's like, I know Kung Fu, you know, give me more, you know, and you just talk like a bajillion miles an hour. But then, you know, sometimes I sit back in the middle of these podcasts or these conversations and I'm just like, you just got to bask in that, like, wow, this is, you know, we're here. This is, you know, this is happening.
I know.
We're experiencing this and it's historical.
It is. And you know, I think that, you know, sometimes I mean, I'm obviously very enthusiastic about all this, but I still fail to fully appreciate the moment that we're in, you know, like that, geez, somehow we were born during this moment where such a fundamental, we're on the precipice again, hopefully, of such a monumental change, and that the changing of the monetary standard, that fundamental thing which organizes human interaction and behavior, that is being upgraded substantially, orders of magnitude. And you look, what interacting with Bitcoin makes you realize, or at least it's one of the things that it helps you see more clearly, is that we are so much a product of our environment. I mean, that's just the way it is. Like, if you were born in the Amazon, you would not be the person you are today, right? And that's an extreme example. But even if you were born in somewhat different circumstances, and so like this, back to that Bitcoin fixes this meme. I mean, I think it's a recognition that a lot of the behavior that we maybe previously had, that we still do, and that a lot of the behavior we see out in the broader world is a result in convoluted, sometimes unclear ways of the system that we are a part of, and that more accurately, that we are subject to. And imagining how operating under a different system and the different incentives inherent in that system will foster and motivate and inspire different behavior is super exciting. Like, it makes you imagine a golden age. Now, like you said, I'm like, there's no utopia. We're, you know, being human beings in a physical world, like there's going to be suffering and there's going to be all the rest of it, but it opens up like a window to what could be. And the more we engage with this and the more time we spend with it, obviously the more hardened our convictions become, because we realize the significance of what it is more and more every day. And then we start to see that out in the broader world. And, you know, that's why we're here talking about it and trying to educate, promote, you know, get hype, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I wonder about is like, if Bitcoin is just opening up our minds so much and it's happening in a really fast way, so that like we are sort of, at least in the, I think in the next decade or two, we're going to, most of us, like the majority of humans are going to be experiencing this sort of awakening to the charade that we've been living in for, you know, really over and over again through all of human history, right? Because the money's always been able to be controlled and co-opted eventually, right? And so if we truly have a money that can happen to, like humans can't fuck it up, because humans will fuck it up if it's at all possible. If that's truly what we have here, then we have something different, something to base a society on, to build a society on that we've never had before. So if that's true, like the psychological implications of that, like, oh shit, like all of that we understood and thought we knew was real or true wasn't, then what does the follow-on effects of that realization have? Like, do we then question everything and start from scratch and have beginner's mind and be like, oh, well, maybe this assumption was wrong. Do we have a society where It's, you know, just much more acceptable to, for instance, like what we were talking about, use psychedelics in therapeutic ways, you know, just things like that. Little things that have been taboo or commonly thought to not be correct or true or right or healthy or whatever. Do we just start questioning those things and start from scratch and build something better, like on every level?
I think the answer is yeah. Like it's both going to inspire that in terms of our own behavior and how we look out at the world, and it's going to allow it in terms of unshackling some of the things that would otherwise restrict those pursuits. And yeah, I mean, like it's why we're here, man. Like it's shocking how enthusiastic and I guess, I mean, it's, you want to be careful with hope, right? Because I was going to use the word hopeful, and you know, hopes can go the opposite way if things don't work out. But I mean, if there was ever a thing to be excited about, if there was ever a cause to fight for and contribute to and to, yes, to align with, I mean, is there any greater like force multiplier for, you know, good and than this? I just, no. There isn't.
There isn't.
Yeah.
It's a possibility to build a whole new world. It truly is something that completely different. Like, you know, even like explorers came across the Atlantic and founded the new world, right? You know, and like talking about like questioning, you know, like rote truth or whatever, like the history that we were taught, you know, which is all very much a bunch of bullshit in a lot of ways, and kind of wake up to that shit. But even those stories, those aspirational, hopeful stories about, you know, what's the word that's coming to me, like the manifest destiny, you know, story and narrative of the American West, and like those were all, none of those were real change, right? It was all just more of the same, built on top of the same. And like money is the foundation of human society,
yeah,
right? I mean, it is, when you have this many humans on the planet, it is, right? I mean, before there was barter and all that stuff before, but that's just not going to happen anymore. It's not possible to go back to that, right? So the money is the foundation. And we truly have something different here, then it changes everything. It's a once in a once in history sort of event.
Yeah, and people,
zero to one moment.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, like maybe we could sum it up, maybe not. But this just popped in my head when you were saying that. But like previously, up until now, you know, the world was a will to power. If you had the power, you could cross the border, you could steal, you could rob, you could whatever, and you gain power and influence that way. Maybe operating with this type of monetary instrument and all the different characteristics that it has and the type of interaction it allows for, maybe we're moving from a will to power to a will to cooperation, you know, and
will to empower.
Yeah, exactly. And if
I'm writing this piece right now.
Oh, really?
I'm telling you. Yeah. Yeah. It's called Satoshi's Will to Empower, and I'm working on it right now. Sick. So a little preview, but like, yeah, when you drop that phrase will to power, I was just like, fuck yeah, man! I'm like, I'm deep in this right now, and like, you know, I'm comparing it to two stories. It's the story of Prometheus, right, which is a story of, you know, taking fire from the gods and giving it to the people, and that's, you know, the will to empower. That's what that story is about. That's what the narrative is about, and that's what Satoshi's done, right? Satoshi selflessly took this power away from central authorities and gave it to the people and then just bowed out, right? Completely selflessly. And then you have the will to power, right? And there's so many good examples of that, but I was drawing from something from literature too. So I'm looking at Dr. Faustus by Marlowe. And, you know, you could say ironically, but I'm sure very intentionally, Craig Wright's handle on Twitter was Professor Faustus. No joke, right? And Faustus' story is making a deal with the devil out of greed for power in this lifetime, right? The will to power.
Really? I didn't know that.
And yeah, so those two stories, I wrote about those two stories back in college, and I've, you know, been thinking about this for months, maybe a year now, like how Satoshi and Prometheus, you know, and then like central banking and Faustus, you know, like it's this Faustian bargain. So yeah, man, the will to empower, the will to empower. I think that there's a lot there to explore. So I'm working on a piece, and I hope to publish it in the next couple of months.
Well, I can't fucking wait to read it, because, you know, that's, I mean, again, the disclaimer for all these conversations is, yes, of course, could be wrong. Yes, we're super enthusiastic. Yes, we're seeing it through rose-colored glasses. Yes, there's going to be unexpected things that pop up to, you know, to challenge us and this and all the rest of it. But I mean, if that is even somewhat true, if human civilization is moving from a will to power, where power rules, right? Mm-hmm. Power, you know, and power corrupts, and you get, you know, dominance, basically. That's the world, to a world of a will to empower, as you said, or a will to cooperation. Then it's like, it's such a fundamental change that we can't even, I mean, it's beyond us to imagine how that might manifest in terms of different behavior, society, civilization, all of that. And it's beyond us. So
I've asked this question at the end of my podcast to a lot of my guests because I just love the cosmic kind of answers that I get from it. But my favorite answer was from Michael Goldstein. And the question is, you know, what's a Bitcoin future look like to you in like 50 years? Right. Just fun speculation, not going to hold you anything. Just let your imagination wild and let's just hear it, right? And immediately, almost immediately, like without hesitation, almost as if he had prepped for this question, but I'm pretty sure he hadn't. I mean, not intentionally. I think he's been thinking about that question for years and years now, but he was just like, there are going to be regions of political experimentation, like dotting the planet. At the center of each will be a thorium reactor mining Bitcoin, and we'll all sort of gravitate like bacteria in a petri dish is like the vision I got. He didn't say that, but like that's the vision I got, right? Toward these sort of like center things, and the factor that will bring everyone together is just, what kind of political experimentation or social experimentation are you into? What kind of society do you want to live in? Under what political rule do you want to live? Because there's these you know, decentralized states, if you want to call them that, to use a term from what I think will be the legacy social system or system of nation states. There's no central authority, right? There's no House of Representatives, president, military. It's decentralized, but you have the ability to roam, right? There's no borders. You can roam. So like one idea, I kind of fleshed this out with, I can't remember who it was, which episode it was now, but I think it was Max Hillebrand, which I know you did a great episode with Max. That guy's amazing.
He's fucking awesome.
So I brought this up with Max and he was like, yeah, so you can, basically you could do something like, you commit a Bitcoin transaction to the blockchain as sort of a, you know, expression of your faith in, or like your goodwill toward trying to interact in this society, right? And if you go in, you commit like whatever it is, 0.02 Bitcoin to the blockchain. And if you violate the rules in that society, then your money gets taken, right? And, you know, maybe you get like pushed out, or you give another chance or whatever, you can put another 0.02 Bitcoin in and get another chance, whatever. But that's the way you get punished, right? It's all economic incentives. And then if you decide you want to take off, you don't like that, you take your 0.02 Bitcoin and go somewhere else. And you just kind of buy in to a society or a social experiment, and you can buy out, you can cash out. There's no control, outward control. It's all, you know, decentralized, and you are in full control of like the way you want to live. I fucking love that idea.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful to me. I mean, yeah, that would be super cool. And like, I always think, yeah, but what about all those people that keep their head in the sand, the Luddites, the people who, you know, whether it's, even if they're not even like intellectually against it, they're just old. Like an 80, 90-year-old's not going to, you know, figure out how to use Bitcoin. So I don't think they'll be convinced into it. But to your point about that scenario, like if it's so clear that life is so much better, like over there where people are interacting based on that versus legacy system or whatever manifestation exists at the time, then, you know, people respond to that. They're like, there's more opportunity. It's safer. It's like, you know, that's a better life over there. We should go over. I mean, you see that today, right? There's jurisdictional arbitrage today. It's in the form of refugees, and like you're leaving an authoritarian government and coming to either a less authoritarian government or, you know, one that's relatively peaceful or whatever. But, you know, that so that process has always existed and it probably always will. And let's hope that it's, like you said, a competitive landscape where everyone's competing to govern you in a way, like, or to figure out the best way to govern. And then you get to plug in for a little while. And if you don't like it, you can bounce.
Yeah, exactly. And it is competition, but it's also cooperation because you're like the competition, you know, creates these differentiations in societies, right? Because there's going to be different desires, different wants of the way you want to live. And so those, you know, people are going to compete against each other. People are going to be drawn to, you know, one sort of way of living or another. But it's also, you know, in the broad scheme, a very cooperative way to live because it's like, you know, we all, there's something for everybody. Like if you want to live this way, you can live that way. You know, if you want to just, like you said, you know, take your Bitcoin and bounce, you know, ostensibly you could go find some place and some other people to gather around and buy some land and start your own little, you know, city or citadel, or whatever the hell you want to call it. You know, and just, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, yeah, there's going to be problems, there's going to be issues, there's going to be like people who want to just like rape and pillage, you know, and that's the way they want to live. And there's going to be people who buy into that and it's going to be like some Mad Max shit. But you know, we'll find ways to, you know, route around that as, you know, there are plenty of people who don't want to live like that too.
Yeah, so. Man. And the fucking Bitcoin, the Bitcoin Jedis will just fucking take care of those motherfuckers.
Right.
You know, I just see like if we obviously we're getting super cosmic in this conversation, but you know, if things play out along such lines and if we both amplify and add to the existing changes in behavior that we see in Bitcoiners, right? Like what do we see? We call it low time preference behavior, right? But it means we're more austere, right? We tend to spend money on only things we need, and we have an eye towards quality because we want them to last a long time. And we're, you know, and again, I am drawing broad brush strokes here, but I don't think anyone listening will have too much of a problem with saying like, and Bitcoiners are starting to like maybe look at their health in a different way and look at their diet and look at, you know, all these different things. If you extract that out 20, 30, 50, 100 years, like, I'd probably get crucified for this, but like I do, like it's not hard to imagine some sort of Jedi-esque sort of society where people like are kind of austere and kind of like minimalist, but you know, like very much sovereign over their bodies and their minds, and you know, very capable in those two domains as well, and just very, you know, just striving for optimal like human function and interaction.
Yeah.
And having the tools to do that way more optimally than we do now. And so like, I just see those trends continuing. And if that's the case, then yeah, our Citadel might be like Jedi's all up in this bitch. And we could we just slice through those Mad Max freaks that are driving around in their old clunkers.
Yeah, we got lightsabers,
yeah,
bitch.
Exactly.
No, but like, but for real, like, you know, throughout history, there's been plenty of examples of times where humans had the space and the freedom, probably made, you know, enabled by, you know, some kind of wealth, but stable wealth of some kind, you know, the visions of monks or, like Japanese samurai, come to mind, you know, the Stoics, and when given that sort of space and freedom and time, like we sort of naturally gravitate toward wanting to work toward that kind of a peaceful existence. And I feel like the fiat, you know, age or just the pattern of the co-opting of money over and over again and the growth of just the sheer number of humans on the planet, that way of living hasn't scaled, right? And because when you grow up in that scale, and especially when you know, the technology we've developed, it makes it just that much easier, right, to control the money and therefore control human action.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think with, you know, like we were saying, this fundamental change, I absolutely can see the space for humans at this scale, at the number of humans that we have on the planet now, many more people being able to have the space and time and freedom to pursue those, you know, desires. I mean, this is what I think most humans want, is to live their optimal life, right?
100%. And I think that's also why, you know, like as Bitcoiners, we see the changes that are happening. We see the landscape, and then we look to the price basically as a proxy for, are other people seeing the world the way that we're seeing it? Because that should, you know, that's the kind of coalescence of that perspective. And that's probably why, you know, we talk about price a lot and look at the price. But yeah, I think that this process will continue. And the thing too, that I remind myself and talk about in conversation sometimes is like, again, cliche incoming, but we are that change. Like, we're not waiting for the change to happen. The change is happening through us. The ways in which our behavior is changing, the way in which the way we interact is changing. Like, we are the emergent change. It's happening through us. So there's nothing to wait for. The only thing to do is continue to attempt to understand yourself better and continue to try to engage yourself in the world on the terms that you think are best and right and good and truthful. And if we continue to do that, this thing that we're imagining, that we're speculating about all the time, and certainly in this conversation, will manifest in the way that it should, you know? So there's nothing to wait for. We're making it happen right now. It's happening through us. And I just, like, I remind myself of that, you know, not infrequently. And notwithstanding the caveat here is, like, of course we're not all fucking perfect. Like, I do stupid shit all the time. You know, it's just, it's the nature of the game. It's the nature of both being human.
It's being human.
Right. Man. And yeah, where we are in this whole thing. And, like, that's part of it, is not taking yourself too seriously. That is an important perspective to have, I think. And I think,
stay humble, man.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Stay humble. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting. It's a mixture of hope and excitement, and trying to stay grounded at the same time while you're floating, you know, up in the stratosphere with hope and optimism about the future. But, you know, look, there's a lot of shit to wade through.
Sure.
to get to a future that might be 10% of that. And yeah, you got to stay humble while you do it. So that's the hard part, right? That's the Zen state. The struggle between the yin and the yang is, we want to, you know, be hopeful and optimistic and aggressive and, you know, just go out there and make it happen. But, you know, you've also got to rein yourself in, be chill, calm, think things through, and balance that out.
And you know, few things fuck with your emotions as much as greed, right? That's one of those things that really pulls on your strings. And, you know, this, that's just a part of interacting with this space, at least at this point in time. And, but again, it's just another one of those challenges, like one of those hurdles that I think is like almost a test for those that desire to engage with this thing most optimally. It's like, yes, you're going to, you know, greed and sorrow are going to be constantly with you in, and how do you respond to that? And how do you change and develop and learn to respond to that better? You know, and again, you use the term Zen. I mean, that also comes up a lot these days, because you interact with this thing enough and you gain a handle on those emotions and you understand how to manipulate them to serve you rather than to be a servant to them. And
yes.
And,
yes.
And again, like, extrapolate that shit out. You got Jedis.
All right, that's where we're headed. I mean, if you guys haven't stacked sats like at least 3 times during this episode, then I don't know what you're doing. Get out there and, you know, 3x your next stack, because damn, like, this did not disappoint. I was excited to, you know, a lot of interviews, you know, like, you know, Adam Back or Andreas Antonopoulos stuff, you prep your stuff, you write out your questions, you script your episode. Right. But then there's some people where you just sit down, like, you know, you and Gigi and Max and Hass, like, you don't do any prep. You just know you're going to sit down and have an awesome conversation with a fellow Bitcoiner.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here tonight. Oh, man, I love you.
I couldn't agree more. I love you too, man. And yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And I'm super grateful that you exist and that you're doing what you're doing and that I get a chance to be a part of it every now and then.
Glad all of you are out there listening and here with us along the ride, man. Make sure you subscribe to John's podcast, Bitcoin Rapid Fire. It's a great one. If you are not yet, you definitely need to have it in your life. John, man, cheers to you. Until next time, we'll definitely be doing this again.
I can't wait to do it in real life, man. My beer is out, but I'm sure when we finally connect in MeetSpace, we'll sit around I envision it like a big, nice wooden table with a few pitchers of beer and maybe you and I and the people you just mentioned, and we just go to town for 3, 4, or 5 hours.
Oh man, that would be incredible. I can't wait. We got to make that happen. Yeah. All right, dude. Cheers to you, man. And yeah, we got to wrap it up here. I could keep going all night, but you know what? Speaking of living your optimal life,
got to get home to the fam.
I got to get home and spend some time with my kiddos and put them to bed. So
fair enough, brother. I totally appreciate that. Let's we'll do it again sometime soon.
All right. Good night, man.
All right, brother. Take care.
Thanks to John for joining me. It was awesome to have him on the show. Let us know your thoughts about the episode. John is at John K. Vallis, JohnKVallis. And I am at Citizen Bitcoin on Bitcoin Twitter. And that's the best way to support the podcast, sharing it out on Twitter. Also with your family and friends, podcast website is citizenbitcoin.world. And thanks again to Swan Bitcoin for sponsoring this episode. Go to swanbitcoin.com to sign up for early access, just a couple weeks away, guys. Thanks to the LTBN for including the Citizen Bitcoin podcast in the feed. And don't forget to check out Bitcoin 2020. We'll see what happens there. Hope we can make it. Hope we can broadcast a bunch of great video and audio from the conference. Check out my merchandise at layer1btc.com. Click on partners and then Citizen Bitcoin. Cool stuff there. Shout out Nick Ward. All right. If you have any questions for me, please feel free to reach out. My DMs are open on Twitter. I'm at Citizen Bitcoin on Telegram and Keybase. And my email address is citizenbitcoin@pm.me. This week's open source shout out is, I've got to repeat it, one, because I just ran out of time to find another one, and two, because hey, it's my project I'm working on. So Bitcoiners Best, we curate the best Bitcoin content to get new coiners up to speed and keep Bitcoiners up to date. We crowd curate it, so you come in and vote 1x for free, 10x for some sats, and we donate those sats to open source projects. Really cool project. Get in there. We've got some great curators joined us now. Coin Icarus from Fun with Bitcoin is in there. David Bennett from Bitcoin And, which is a daily listen for me. Sorry, I spaced on that for a second, David. All right, so you can DM at Bitcoiners Best on Twitter if you're interested in joining our very, very cool Keybase team. We approve submissions. We, you know, evaluate them for Bitcoin onlyness, and we, you know, add stuff ourselves. So come join us. It's fun. All right, that's it for this week. Take care out there, Bitcoiners, wherever you happen to be in the world. Thank you.